In today's Mishnah, we're in the seventh and final Mishnah, ninth Perek, Masechet Sanhedrin, and we'll begin the ninth Perek. And in yesterday's Mishnah, we discussed the Habava Machter, the person who was breaking into an individual's house, and we also, prior to that, discussed the Bensor Amoreh. These were individuals who were able to kill prior to them committing a particular sin. So the Mishnah now expands that concept. It says, Eluhin shematzim tam nafsham, to kill them when they're, say, chasing after an individual or on their way to commit a particular sin. So we're allowed to execute them prior to them committing that sin. So the first is harodef achar chaver lahorgo. That is an individual, that's the basis of the case we learned in yesterday's Mishnah. That is an individual that is chasing after another individual to kill him. So they call out to warn the individual, the person still in pursuit, you're allowed to kill the rodef, the person who's about to kill the other party to save this other individual from being killed. And also achar hazachur, if a man is chasing another one in order to rape him, once again, this is another situation where we're allowed to kill the potential rapist. And the final one is ve'achar ha'na'aram me'orasa, and this is particularly the reason why we mention this case in a minute, is despite the fact it's actually broader than this case, is because the Torah specifically says by the na'aram me'orasa, this is a young girl who is betrothed, it says ki bistem atzashi, if we find her in the field, tsa'aka ha'na'aram asa ve'in boshiela, and this is referring to a case of rape, and there was no one to save her. We understand from this that if there was someone to save her, that you're able to save her even benafsho, even with the by killing the person who is potentially about to rape her. And the truth is that when it comes to the world of Ariot, forbidden relationships that are punishable either with karet or mitat beitin, that one would be able to execute the person, the potential rapist, the person who's about to commit this offense, by taking their life. So you have to kill them prior to them actually committing the sin. Aval ha'rodef achar behema, if someone is chasing after an animal, that, you know, is about to commit an act of bestiality, va'mechalel shabbat, or someone is violating the prohibition of shabbat, va'oved avodah zarah, or someone's about to engage in idol worship, ein matzino tam nafsham, you cannot kill them prior to them committing these violations. One has to first warn them, and if they wish to still violate this prohibition, it's still not allowed to kill them. You simply bring them to Beit Din and try them under the normal matter of the law. The reason is because it's only these, as I've already mentioned, this actually learned from Psukim, but it's only those prohibitions where another party is going to be affected by the person about to commit the sin. So there's cases of rape or murder like we've already described. Let's learn the first Mishnah in the ninth Perek. The mission begins. Ve'ilahin nisrafim. So we've talked about previously the particular prohibitions. If violated, would be punishable with skila. So now we go through other forms of capital punishment. The next is nisrafim. Who would be chayv sreifa, which we explain is burning, but more of an internal burning that has occurred. We say that is haba al isha ubita. That is someone who has a relationship with a woman, meaning his wife and daughter. And that's from the actual language of the pasuk. Ervat isha ubita lo tigale. But that actually is much broader than just simply his wife's daughter, as we'll learn in a minute. And next one is a bat kohen shezinta. This is referring to a daughter of a kohen. So if this woman's father was a kohen, and she was married, and she had an affair. There's a specific prohibition for a bat kohen that she'll be punishable with sreifa. It is still a capital offense for anybody else, but it's a different form of punishment they would receive. That would be chenek bat, which we'll learn. And Mishnah says, Yesh bichlal isha ubita. When having mentioned a woman and her daughter, there's actually, this is much broader. That extends it to also simply his daughter that wasn't from his wife. So for example, if he raped a woman and that woman had a daughter, if he had a relationship with that daughter, that would also be punishable with sreifa. Or bat bito or bat beno, also the granddaughter from such a relationship. Next is bat ishto, that's his wife's daughter. So a stepdaughter is also punishable with sreifa. Or bat bita or bat bana, also a granddaughter of his wife. Be it the daughter's daughter or the son's daughter. V'chamoto, v'em chamoto, v'em chamiv. Those would also go in the other direction, not just down the generations, but up the generations as well. If his mother-in-law or his mother-in-law's mothers or his father-in-law's mother, all of these things will be punishable with a sreifa based on this pasuk. Kati points out for us that this brings the total number to 10 different acts one could perform in order to be punishable by sreifa. 9 forbidden relationships, and the 10th is also forbidden relationship, but we're following that's a bat kohen that has an affair. Next, Elohen and Haragim. These are the particular prohibitions or crimes committed that one will be punishable with hereg. We find that's when the person is decapitated by the sword. We said Harotzeach, someone who commits murder, he's punishable with hereg. And also Anshe Yarni Dachat. This is a city that is a majority of the individuals are idol worship, commit idol worship, and the residents of the city would receive this capital punishment of hereg. Again, I believe we're going to be learning about it in much more detail as we go along. Rotzeach shihika et rehu be'evan or be'barzel. Someone who commits murder, that's if someone strikes someone with a stone or with iron. What's interesting, what's the point with mentioning iron? That is because there's no shear, even a masher or even a small amount of iron, as we all too well know today with the concept of bullets and things like that, can actually kill an individual. It doesn't have to have a shear, it can even be the smallest size. Mishnah continues, other cases where one would be could be tried for murder, that's the kavash, if someone drowned a person, alav l'toch hamayim, so pushed an individual and kept him underwater, or l'toch ha'or, or he threw him into a fire and ensured he stayed there. In those situations, he would be tried for murder. And that's importantly, if you push these people into these environments and they couldn't get out, umet, and then he died, then that person would be chayev for murder and he would be killed, be besayef or beherig, as we explained. If you threw him into water, or latocha or, he threw him into a fire, and the person could have escaped quite easily, umet, and then died, we say patur. Despite the fact that he put him into that environment, since he could have got out, he would not be tried for murder. Shisa boi takelev, if he incited a dog, a wild dog, he riled it up and it went and bit an individual and killed him, or shisa boi tanachash, or he incited a snake and the snake came and bit the individual. In that situation, we say it's patur. Why? Because in this situation, the cause of death is indirect. And he cannot be tried in a beit din in this world for killing someone in this indirect manner. Only if he actually actively, with his hands, kills someone. Hishich bo et anashach, if he brings a snake and places it on an individual's body, so he grabs a snake and places it there and in order to bite, Rabbi Yehuda says, mechayev v'chachamim potrim. There's a debate whether it be chayev then. Why? Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, it is absolutely direct. Because as soon as you place the snake, say, on the body of this of the victim, the venom is in the teeth ready to be injected. It's almost a direct result, the venom being injected in the individual as a result of him placing the snake on the victim. However, Chachamim potrim this because they hold eres ben shenavhu omded, that the venom is simply sitting there and it's the snake ultimately that will inject the poison. So the Chachamim hold, even in this case, it is still considered indirect and he could not be tried in a beit din in this world. Hamakeh et chavero bein be'evan bein be'grof. If someone struck an individual, either with a stone or with a fist, v'amdu l'mita, the beit din saw that this person is gravely ill and they thought he was about to die. V'akel mi masha haya, and his situation seemed to improve. And they thought, actually, this guy might indeed recover. However, l'achar mikan, hichbid v'met. However, unfortunately, his situation declined and he died. In that case, we say, there's a debate, Chachamim say he's still chayev, because he ultimately brought about the death individual. However, Rabbi Nechemiah says, Patu, why should Raglaim Ledavar? Now, according to Rabbi Nechemiah, how do we understand these last two words, Raglaim Ledavar, I'll explain in a minute. According to Rabbi Nechemiah, he says, since his situation improved, it seems to be that the latter decline has nothing to do, it's almost like in Raglaim Ledavar, there's no legs to the man. I mean, the latter decline has to do with something else entirely, not as a result of the first blow. However, there's another way to understand Raglaim Ledavar is that there's actually Raglaim Ledavar is Chachamim. It says, despite the fact there was a small period of improvement in this individual state, Raglaim Ledavar is quite clear if we look at the broader picture that his decline came, his death came as a result of this strike by fist or stone. And that's why we have a debate here between Chachamim or the Tanakam. The first opinion says he's indeed should be tried for murder because despite the fact there was a momentary improvement or intermediate improvement, he still brought about this individual's death. Those Mishnah today.